Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thank you for joining me here live on Real Liberty Media or downloading the podcast. I always appreciate that. Let's make sure everything is up and running. It looks like it is. I got bears on behind me. I hope you enjoy that. It's kind of a highlight reel. Pretty fun to watch, though. I mean, I just love watching them. And just about, a half hour ago on this highlight, they actually showed a wolf. A wolf wandered in. So that was kind of cool. Let's do this. The fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I'm just a guy having fun, making light of the darkness. Hey, if you are on a social media site, and I don't blame you if you're not, but if you are, could you post that we're live and let people come and join us in the chat and just enjoy the live show? Or, you know, if you're listening on podcasts, be sure and, you know, post the podcast to people on your social media sites and let's get some more people here. Real Liberty Media is growing. I actually saw a little update today. I talked to Vin E. On the phone for a bit. And yeah, some cool things are coming, so hang in there. We're gonna turn this ship around. Anyway, let's see. Updates on the homestead I wanted to go over real quick. Man, I was looking at all the produce that we have stacked up out here in what we're calling now the clubhouse. It's not really a clubhouse, it's just a little, it's an area that's hard to describe. But we have all kinds of food out there, tomatoes, melons. We have watermelons. They're not the big ones like you buy in the store. They're kind of really a lot smaller, but they're very sweet and tasty. And some cantaloupes and corn we finished harvesting. Yeah, just a ton of food going on there. So that's pretty cool. And getting toward the end of the season, last weekend I spent 6 hours hauling manure to the north pasture and spreading it up there. On the tractor, it just beat the crap out of me too, by the way. I was surprised at how sore I was the day after riding that tractor. It was crazy. Let's see. Oh, tons of stuff to cover again today. I was going to, and I may kind of toward the end of the show, talk about detoxing from the spike protein. But it really almost needs to be a show all by itself to really give it some justice, I guess. Or do it justice, I should say. Hang on one sec. Okay, I'm back. Anyway, so I might kind of talk about it a little bit. It probably won't be anything new. Maybe there's some new stuff in there. Vinny says, what a ride. Averaged 25 miles an hour today. That does not sound good. I hope that's not correct, but maybe it is. Maybe he was taking his time enjoying the ride, or maybe there was some horrible weather or traffic or something. I don't know where he is for sure. But, yeah. Anyway, where was I? Lost my train of thought already. I hate when I do that. The detoxing from the spike protein. I wanted to tell you, this is kind of interesting. My cardiac rehab nurses, they're great, by the way. I'm going to shout them out probably next show also. But they really do take good care of cardiac patients. You know, I really don't feel like I needed good care, but I did. I had a heart attack, and it's so hard for me to come to grips with that because I was in good shape going in, and I was in good shape coming out. So, but they really are awesome people. There's two nurses that run that program, and they've really been fantastic. And I've said some things that probably they found controversial, which is good. You know, I mean, they're not closed-minded, of course. They seem like they are open to some new information. So they had on their board, they have a whiteboard in there, and they try and put things up there to give you tips on living a healthier life as a cardiac patient. And one day they had resveratrol up there, which is, you know, it's in red wine and it's in blueberries and dark chocolate. Anyway, there's a lot of places you can get resveratrol. But also I noticed in the detoxing the spike protein, actually resveratrol is very good at repairing DNA, which we all need our DNA repaired, whether you've had the vax or not, doesn't matter. It's good to get some of that DNA repair going on in your system. And what I found interesting is it actually works better in concert with quercetin, which is in tonic water. So I had this thought. I thought, well, I'll just put some tonic water in some red wine. And I thought, man, that probably tastes horrible. Just terrible. So I think I'll keep them separate. But anyway, I was telling them about, you know, this information I had in this article about detoxing from the spike protein, and resveratrol was in there, and they actually wanted me to share the article with them, so I did that today, and I haven't got any feedback yet, but it's kind of a long article, and resveratrol is just a small portion of the article. And I told them, I said, you guys don't have to read the whole article, but, you know, you should read this part about the resveratrol, because you talk about it and put it on your board and stuff. Anyway, it was pretty good conversation, and I kind of want to encourage people to have conversations, right? Like, you can have short, kind of enlightening conversations with people. You don't have to have, you know, you don't have to get in these arguments that you see people get into all the time. Although I have a feeling that there are some people that that's all they want to do. They just want to argue. I honestly haven't found any yet that wanted to argue with me, which is kind of interesting, because I try and I try to get people to engage, but if they don't, that's fine too. I kind of feel like if they don't, must mean that they don't have anything to engage with. And that's fine, because I don't want to like waste my time and energy, you know, not having a conversation. But I think it's good. I love doing this show. It's just a hobby for me at this point. I'd love to grow the show. I'm looking at ways to do that. But really, I do it just to have some fun, you know, and to, I guess, voice my opinion, to let my voice be heard in some little way. And I really wish more people would do something, like talk to someone. Today I wrote who I think is going to be the next governor of the state of Oregon, Christine Drazen, and she'll be the first Republican governor in like 40 years or something like that. I really think she's going to win, and I wrote her, And I wrote her because it's kind of another one of those things, you know. You don't have to engage people. You don't have to say anything. You can live your life and just, you know, live it out, and hopefully you live a life of freedom and liberty and you die happy. That's kind of what I intend to do. But because it looks like the political atmosphere could be changing at least a little bit, especially here in Oregon, oh my gosh, man, we have suffered at the hands of the left for, well, decades now, and they've done a fantastic job of completely destroying this state. So, if things are going to change, I kind of figured I'm going to get my foot in the door by starting to write this person. I know she's not going to read what I wrote. Some handler will read it, or some staffer will read it. But that's okay. It'll still get read, and it'll probably still get passed on. And basically, this is what I told her. And I'll explain a little bit. I told her, I know you're going to win. When you do, please cut off this Emergency Powers Act that this governor has used far beyond any necessary means or reasons. And I said, and get rid of that state epidemiologist who's actually a pediatrician, and he can't think for himself, he can't manipulate, he can't interpret science findings very well, obviously, because he keeps recommending that we keep wearing masks in this state, not everywhere, but especially in healthcare settings, which really doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, I don't know who you're protecting. Oh, people are going to say I'm so irresponsible for saying that. But actually, if you think about it, you come into my office, I'm wearing a mask, gloves, I got a gown on. We disinfect everything between every patient. All the instruments are sterilized. Everything is completely changed and sterile before the next person comes in. So who's going to get sick in that scenario? I mean, yeah, I don't want to work on sick patients, but I've never wanted to work on sick patients, and I haven't. If people come in with a fever or a cold, and I think, I just suspect that they're infectious, like they just got this cold and they have a fever, no, I'm not seeing them because I don't want to be sick. My staff will tell you that I take enough time off as it is. And they like to get paid, so they like to work, and they don't like to have to go work in another offices if they can help it. So, having people mask up before they come in the building, man, it just irritates the crap out of me. Because the science doesn't support it. That's my main beef, is the science doesn't support it, right? Like, if the science supported wearing a mask, okay, it'd be, maybe it would make some sense, but it doesn't. I told her to do that and to get rid of this epidemiologist. I didn't tell her. I suggested, that she should get rid of, like, certain people need to go, especially if they're appointees. It's time to get rid of them. And, get people in there who have a brain and can use it. No, I wasn't stumping for a position, although I just thought to myself, honestly, I could be an epidemiologist. If a pediatrician can be an epidemiologist, anybody could be an epidemiologist. You just have to be able to read data, interpret data, and then make a decision that makes sense, supported by the data. Oh my gosh. Yeah, and then I told her that we needed to start prosecuting the people who took away our civil rights. And the people had to be held accountable for it. And I hope that, and one person can't do all this stuff. That's the problem. Okay, so if she becomes governor, we still have a ton of Democrats, leftists in the, House and Senate here in Oregon. And that, it's going to take a while to change, although we're changing that, with this election cycle, we're changing it. Will it be enough? I don't think so. But next election cycle, we should make some more gains. So eventually, maybe we can turn this state around. I think all in all, people are freaking tired, man, of everything that's going on in this state. I've talked about the homeless thing before. I really didn't want to go totally political this first 15 minutes, but I guess I'm going to, and maybe some more. From the homeless crisis here, which the government that's in charge right now keeps trying to solve the homeless crisis by making the homeless more comfortable. you know, by providing more and more benefits to the homeless. Now, come on. I mean, the rest of us need some attention, too. And the problem is the focus has been on the homeless population in Oregon. And what can we do for them? And the more that you do for homeless people, the more you attract homeless people. And I don't mean we make more, although the last 2 years has certainly, 3 years has certainly made more people homeless. And more are going to be homeless the next year or so. The problem is, if you have the best gig in the United States for people being homeless, guess where people who become homeless in Kansas are going to end up? In Minnesota are going to end up. In Montana are going to end up. In Arizona, you know, New Mexico, all of these places are going to be like, yeah, I hear you, you know, you can get all these benefits in Oregon. You know, and I've actually had people come to Oregon. They end up in my dental chair because I see patients who are on the state insurance system. And, you know, and I'm just talking to them, oh, when did you come to Oregon? You know, because they'll say, yeah, we just moved here. And I'll be like, oh, how long you been here? 30 days. Wow. Man, you were here 30 days and you already got, you know, health care benefits so you can come to see the dentist. And that means medical is in place too, because dental is not the highest priority ever. So, yeah. So the more you provide these benefits to the homeless, the more and more homeless you're going to get, instead of actually, you know, number one, I know it sounds horrible, but you got to get rid of some of those benefits for homeless people. I'm sorry, but, you know, you need to go find a job. There's 100 bajillion jobs right now available. So go get a job, start putting some money away. We'll find a place for you to live and have shelter. But, you know, you got to go work, you know, it's become such a crisis here in Oregon, and eventually it's going to crumble. Eventually, there's just not going to be enough money to pay for all of the people who are homeless. And this current mayor of Portland, oh my God, Ted Wheeler, that guy is an idiot. Really a complete idiot. So he recently got sued by the American for Disabilities, or under the American for Disabilities Act, because the homeless are taking up so much sidewalk space that people in wheelchairs or walkers or whatever are not able to access places that they want to access. So because he was getting sued, he had to come up with another solution besides just allowing people to sleep and pitch their tents wherever they want on the streets in front of businesses who are paying, you know, premium real estate prices to, you know, have their businesses in Portland. But they're also giving up, you know, some, you know, foot traffic because people can't even get into their shops and go buy stuff. And people don't want to walk by a bunch of, you know, homeless tents and any criminal activity that goes along with that. And I know people are going to say that I said that homeless people are criminals. That's not true, but there is a criminal element to some of those people. I mean, a lot of them are addicted to drugs and, you know, or stealing stuff to make money for drugs or whatever. But anyway, yeah, you can't. So Mayor Wheeler, in his infinite wisdom, after a lawsuit was filed against him, he decided that what he's going to do is create some homeless camps in places where, you know, they're not in the way. The homeless people are not in the way, or they have, you know, specific time or places set aside, and everybody can go live there. And of course, they're going to provide, you know, sanitary facilities and garbage pickup and counselors and, you know, all this other stuff. So that's really not what I think everybody is looking for as far as a solution to the homeless problem. But typical of the left, the way that they figure, the idea they have for solution is to make sure there's more of that problem for them to cater to. And I, you know, back to what I was saying about, you know, maybe Oregon is going to change is because, you know, there's only, I think they said a couple thousand homeless people in Portland. Portland, if you include the outlying areas, is well over a million population. I think Portland's official population is like 500,000 or something like that. But all the surrounding metro areas, you know, if you include all of them, it's like a million people. Well, those million people are tired of the homeless problem in Portland. And I'm not kidding. Maybe someday, I hate Portland myself, can't stand it. It used to be a beautiful city, and now it's just a complete dump. It's, you know, it's filthy. It's like a mini San Francisco. There's, you know, urine and feces and graffiti and dirty people all over the place. And I mean literally all over the place. But I really should drive through there and have the camera running and just video some of these areas. I'm sure you can find it on the internet. In fact, there's a couple of people I followed that one guy in particular, I forget what his site is called because I just ran into him lately, but he's always covering Portland, which is really interesting. Man, I had a thought right there. Oh, well, got away from me. That's okay. We'll probably get to it. I think it was something I was going to talk about anyway. Anyway, so maybe for Oregon, maybe things are going to change. Let's see how drastically they can change. But my point is, you know, let your voice be heard. Don't be quiet anymore. I mean, it's time to not be quiet. You know, the left and the mainstream media has run things for so long, and now they're starting to pay the price because people are waking up. We're tired of what's gone on. And I think what I really want to say is, hey, if you like the way your life is right now, well, then keep voting the way that you've been voting. If you don't like it, it's time to change, you know, and be part of the change. Become active if that's what you have to do. I know, like a lot of people, including myself, have given up on elections. I don't think that that's the solution, but it's one of the only tools we still have to make a change in the world, in the country. And maybe it's not too late. I don't know. I mean, I like to stay positive. I like to keep thinking that, you know, we're going to get through this. Because we always do. But man, oh man, the incline is getting to be so steep anymore. We're going to need some real specialized equipment to actually make this happen. And I think, you know, people just, I mean, look at the opportunity we have now. We have media. I mean, if a goof like me can put a show together, you know, and figure out how to run a mic and a video camera and get some audio going. Yeah, I know I'm not an idiot. I know that. But seriously, you know, you can apply yourself. You can get a show. You can, you know, have a group get together and talk about stuff. And you can do the same thing in real life. You know, get active with your local, you know, just your local town council or city council or whatever. And make your voice heard. I actually read a story today that's not in the stack today, that a school, public school, God, I think it was New Jersey. I kind of wish I would have tagged it at least. But this public school said parents have no right to decide what their children learn in school, and that they are free to take their children somewhere else. And I just thought to myself, man, that person is really out of touch with reality. Because parents, taxpayers, are the ones funding their schools. And I hope something actually gets done about that person. I hope that that comment just stirred the ire of parents in that school district to get them motivated to go and say something. Parents, grandparents, you know, extended family members all need to show up to these school board meetings and put that jerk in his place. The sad thing is that somehow we got to this point that somebody like that could get in a position and think that they have that kind of power, which is exactly why I wrote the future governor of Oregon, Christine Drazen, and asked her to put some of these people in their place and get rid of them. You know, be bold. Make a statement. Yeah, it's not going to be popular. Who cares? Who cares at this point? I think a lot of people are going to stand behind smart decisions. I hope so, anyway. Well, let's see what is in the stack today. I know there's a bunch of stuff. Yeah. So when I was talking about data, I wanted to get to this story. It says, welcome to the new science of science, which is actually no science at all. Let's see, make sure this is on the camera. This is Horowitz wrote this for Conservative Review. Scottish government won't investigate vaccination status of women who lost babies for fear of the truth. Yeah, I think so. It will be more popular than she thinks. Thank you. But here's the deal. So the Scottish government noticed an increase in infant deaths during and after, you know, pregnancy. And they, you know, of course, people want to know, hey, how come there's a 25% increase in infant deaths? And the Scottish government said, you know, well, I mean, they like beat this around a little bit. They had to talk about it a bit. Yeah, so look at this. On October 9th, the Scotland Herald published an article titled COVID Scotland, Vaccines Ruled Out in Neonatal Death Spike. And this author says, naturally, I was intrigued to find out how the health authorities studied this and how they ruled out the vaccines as a cause. Well, it turns out they studied it by not studying it. They refused to study the vaccination status of the mothers and just opted to conclude on their own that there was no plausible link between the shots and the shocking rise in neonatal deaths that cannot be attributed to chance. Why would they do this? According to the Herald, Public Health Scotland said its consultants had given careful consideration to the potential benefits and harms of carrying out such an analysis as part of its probe into the tragic deaths of 39 infants, but concluded against doing so because it was not possible to identify a scenario that would have resulted in a change to public health policy or practice, given that vaccination policy was already appropriately informed by good quality population level evidence and safety data. Yeah, they can't handle the truth being known. That's exactly right, because look at what it says. It gets even worse. In a statement, PHS added that there was also a risk that identifying the vaccination status of the mothers, even at aggregate level, would result in harm to those individuals and others close to them through actual or perceived judgment of the effects of their personal vaccination decision. The last sentence is the real money quote, though. Furthermore, the outcomes of such analysis, whilst being uninformative for public health decision-making, had the potential to be used to harm vaccine confidence at this critical time. No kidding! Which is exactly what we need. We need some challenge to this vaccine confidence. I mean, for crying out loud. Whatever her name is, and the CDC director, God dang it, I hate that I forget her name. But so she got her fifth shot, which is, I don't know, booster number 3, that was Omicron specific, and still she ends up getting COVID shortly after the shot. And somehow they want you to continue to believe that this jab does anything, and it doesn't. It obviously doesn't. It's a complete failure, except that it's made Pfizer a few billion dollars and Moderna and forget the names of all the companies that have made of jab juice. But yeah, so yeah, don't you think that that would disturb public confidence in the vaccine efficacy if people knew that, you know, there was a 25% increase in infant deaths? And shouldn't it? My gosh, man, I just hope we get back to some level of sanity when it comes to public health decisions. And I don't know that that's going to happen with the current public health, the current public health officials that we have, or the current public health system that we have, because it's not working. It's not working when you have one guy who's making all the decisions, and then you have a bunch of little minions who are going to get right on his coattails and just run along with daddy and do whatever daddy says, and nobody challenges it. But people got to pay. There's a commercial here in Oregon. One of the Dems is running on this. One of the statements in her commercial is, and, you know, the Republican opponent. And the Republican opponent wants Fauci tried for mass murder. And I was like, yeah, there's a lot of us who want to see Fauci tried for mass murder. You know, guilt by association, at the very least, he was complicit in having everybody in the world take this jab when he knew what was... He obviously knew all of the information that they had gathered, either the manufacturers and their reports or the actual public health service and any studies they've done, and anybody who gathered any kind of information and sent it forward saying, hey, we're getting a lot of, you know, inflammation at the injection site, or we're getting a lot of joint pain for weeks after the injection, or we're having people drop dead of blood clots in their heart from, you know, shortly after the injection. And they ignored it all and kept pushing, and still to this day are pushing the jab. You know, the idiot in the public health service today of the United States said that this is going to be an annual vaccination. And they just said it like, yeah, you're going to go get your vaccination every year. Sorry, we're not doing that anymore. I really hope there is a red tsunami. I'm not kidding. I really hope there is a red tsunami this year. I hope it just wipes out however many leftists we can wipe out and start changing the tide. And start putting people on trial. Start holding people accountable. Let people know that you cannot violate the civil rights of citizens of the United States of America, or any other country for that matter. You know? Yeah. I was talking about debates, and I don't know if you saw that Fetterman debate last night. If you didn't see it live, you really need to go watch that debate live. It's only an hour long. Timcast IRL did a show on it, and they streamed it live, and they commented during the, they were actually really quiet when Oz and Fetterman were talking. You need to go see that. And I don't just mean Timcast IRL, but I love that guy. I think he and his journalists do a really good job. He's got a great show. And, man, he walks a fine line. But Fetterman had a stroke, and he is brain damaged. He literally is brain damaged. That's what a stroke does. And, you know, it used to be, I don't know, a long time ago, they said that, you know, the greatest percentage of recovery is shortly after a stroke. Well, guess what? It's been months. So I don't think Fetterman's going to get much better. Here's the problem, though. When the leader of your party is basically brain dead, severely has severe dementia, wanders around, tries to wander off in the woods, has no idea where he's going, tries to shake people's hands that aren't there. When that's your leader and he's literally in, you know, at the leader of the free world, so to speak, yeah, the bar's been set pretty damn low. I think a lot of people are gonna vote for Fetterman. I'm sure they probably think he just is going to be fine. And he's not fine. And, you know, they try and defend him like, you know, he's disabled. And you can't pick on him because he's disabled. He can't freaking speak. He can't understand what is being said to him. He needs teleprompters, and he didn't even do a decent job against, you know, with the teleprompters. He was very, like, if you notice, it's like somebody told him in the beginning, no compound sentences. You know, just stick to 5-6 word answers. It was, I'm torn because it was a horrible performance, but I also felt bad for him. It's like the chick that comes out wearing something that she, you know, she's out in public and she shouldn't be wearing what she's wearing. And you just look at her and you think, God dang it, she doesn't have any friends. Like, her friends didn't tell her that that looks horrible. It could apply to guys too, I'm sure. Guys, we don't care. We'll wear whatever. But yeah, that was an eye-opening debate. And I don't know why I watched it. It's in Pennsylvania. I'm, you know, 2,000 miles from Pennsylvania. But I just wanted to see how, because I'd heard a lot about him, you know, and what the effect the stroke had on him. And I wanted to see it for myself and to see it live so that no editing was done. Because, you know, like if you saw some of the answers on the news today, and you actually had seen the debate live, you knew that those weren't the, yes, they were the answers he gave, but that was not the way he gave the answers. So, yeah, it was interesting. Let's see, where's my editorials here? Oh, yeah. So, I thought this was interesting, too. This email, you got to see this. Now, this, I almost wanted to do a whole hour on this story, so we're going to have to try and keep it short. And I don't know why, this is one of those things, is like, why did I read this story? Because it sounds like, I don't know, it didn't sound like a major discovery to me. So that you can see the title, New Email Reveals Answer to Establishment's Efforts to Oust Trump. So I'm thinking, okay, this is kind of, you know, going to point out the partisan, you know, Trump takedown, and, you know, maybe it'll be interesting, maybe it won't. But actually, when I read this story and I kind of finished thinking about it a little bit, I was thinking, you know, when people start talking about something and they try and make it the highest priority thing, and then later on you find out it was them who was actually doing that thing. That's what happened to me with this story. Because the left has gone so far as to have this January 6th commission, you know, to determine, you know, who has caused, who was responsible for the insurrection. Well, guess what? I'll tell you who's responsible for an insurrection. It's the FBI and the CIA and the left and Obama and Clinton. And I mean, people in this one article, so much came out that I was baffled by, shocked by. And it really hit me. This is where the insurrection happens, right here, by militarizing the intelligence agencies against civilians, against former presidents, by having somebody like Barack Obama with Hillary Clinton both kind of get in on this thing and like, yeah, we're going to start this whole investigation, and we're going to put people in place that, you know, in the FBI, in the CIA, in the NSA, we're going to put people in place that will not disclose this investigation to the next president of the United States. And then they doctored so much stuff up, faked, literally made stuff up to try and topple basically the right. Let's just spit it out. Basically the conservatives in this country. And that effort went through, it went through the federal government, the president, Trump, you know, and all of his people. It's gone through, to civilians, through the social media platforms that I said in the beginning of this show. I don't blame you if you're not on any. I mean, you know, I'm on Minds, I'm on Truth Social, I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter. I do that to pump the show, to get people to try and find those people who are looking for the truth so they can come and listen to the show. You know, the show's doing really good on podcast downloads, so eventually, you know, when we, you know, kind of hit our stride, I think there's going to be plenty of people, you know, getting the information, and that's good. I think it's good. But, you know, I mean, the collusion of all, just think about this. They're trying to say that those few hundred people that showed up at the White House with no guns, with no armor, and I'm talking like a military coup type takeover. If you're going to take over a sitting government, you come with big arms, big armor, like big guns. You don't walk in there in your sheepskin and sandals, you know, and think you're going to take over the elected government. So the collusion has been through all these social media sites, which those people need to pay the price to. Every single one of the heads of these social media sites, social media platforms, they need to pay the price. They're not above the law. They have been above the law, but they are not above the law. Nobody is above the law. And that, you know, that's the argument that the left has been saying for years now, for 2 years, for even before that. When Trump announced that he was running, they started going after him. And they haven't stopped. And they're trying to stop him from running in 24. Because he's dangerous. He is dangerous. He actually thinks like a logical human being. You know, just, I want to live my life, man. I want liberty and freedom, and I want America to be great, and I want our businesses to do well, and I don't want to tax people who want to, you know, make things here in the United States. But here you have the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, Facebook, Twitter, I don't know, who else, YouTube, everybody censoring any kind of opposition to their message. Now think about that. Is that a coup or not? If you eliminate completely the discussion on the, of any kind of opposition, you've basically already started a coup, an insurrection, by weaponizing these intelligence agencies only against one part of the very nation that they're supposed to protect. Half of the population has become the enemy. Be interesting to see what happens. It really is going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't know if you guys know about Cliff High. He's another great guy to listen to. I don't know where this guy gets his information. It blows me away every single time I listen to the guy. I don't have time to listen to everybody I want to listen to all the time. But I get to his shows pretty regularly now because, man, he's hitting on all cylinders. Really bright guy. Look him up. He's on Rumble and BitChute, I think. I don't think he's on YouTube. I don't know. Yeah, first sign that's Marxist, turn against your own. Yeah, turn against half the country. And that's what's happened. In fact, I'll kind of be honest with you. I'll be kind of surprised if a red wave happens because I'm not so sure that that the left's going to let that happen legally. You know, if they're going to... Oh, BitChute, thank you. He's on BitChute mainly. Cliff High is on BitChute and not on YouTube. And I don't blame... You know what? I was gonna mention this today. I have about 5 or 6 creators that I support every month. I pay money to make sure that they continue to make content. Or to encourage them to continue to make content and to show them I appreciate your content. I don't think... You know, one of those people is Timcast IRL. And I'm really kind of at the point where I don't want to support anybody who's on YouTube, which is kind of sad because he has a great show and I really appreciate everything I hear on his show. Luckily, he's kind of started to move over to Rumble. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, you can't continue to support places that don't support you or actually work against you in every single way possible. At least it's not a good idea. And I know everybody doesn't have, you know, the ability to support multiple, you know, content creators. I'm just, you know, until I retire, I'm using my money where I think it's going to do me and people the most good. I love content creators. I guess being one now it has a whole different meaning. But let's look at some of this story. Let's see what are the notes I had. Let me see here. I want to go back. Let's see. I'm going to open this up properly. I have this, you know, great tool I did a little demo of. Open to the right. That's what I want. Open to the right. Okay. So with the benefit of this new information... Okay, let me go back. An FBI email previously not known to the public has revealed that the Bureau planned to make Igor Danchenko the primary source for the British former spy Christopher Steele's Trump dossier, a confidential human source. So get this. The FBI... So this email points out that the FBI was going to make Danchenko a confidential human source about the Steele dossier before they ever even interviewed him or talked to him. So they are already planning their, you know, their coup. They're planning their insurrection. With the benefit of this new information, a renewed examination of the timeline between November 8, 2016, presidential election, and the appointment of special counsel Robert Mueller on May 17, 2017, reveals that the FBI, with the help of the Obama administration and Washington establishment figures, executed a concerted campaign to oust a sitting president. The move by the FBI also directly coincided with President Barack Obama's wishes expressed during a January 5th White House intelligence briefing on the dossier that he wanted to withhold information from the incoming Trump administration. Tell me this is not an insurrection. There's so much in this freaking story. Yeah, And it's crazy. But if you go, if you read this story, I'll try and put the link to this story in my notes, which I better remember to do that now that I said it. This story is mind-boggling. And such a well-done, not even a summary, I would say. This editorial, investigative report, is very well done. A lot of specifics in here. And I couldn't believe the names were dropping in here. Anyway, there's your insurrection. It wasn't the group of people at the Capitol on January 6th, obviously. They weren't ready for an insurrection. You know, they wanted to have their voices heard. They wanted to make a statement. They weren't going to overthrow anything with whatever it is they had on them. They just weren't prepared for it. And nobody's buying it. Nobody's buying it. You know, I think when the new administration takes over here in a few weeks, I'm pretty sure that'll be the end of that little well, no, it won't. I'm sure the committee will go on. They've tried to subpoena Trump. We'll see. We'll see how that works out for him. I think I heard him say, hell yeah, I'll do it. Just we'll do it live. You know, we'll do it live. So there's no editing. Yeah. You know, this reminds me of those bullies that are, you know, strutting their stuff and telling everybody the way it's going to be until somebody stands up right to their face and says, okay, let's go. Yeah, they don't want it live. The January 6th committee doesn't want it live because they want to hide everything. Because they know they have nothing. They know that as long as they're in the dark, they can operate as evilly as they wish. But when the light shines on them, when it's live TV, and Trump spilling the beans and putting people on notice, yeah, it's not going to be so comfy. You know, a bipartisan committee with a couple rhinos on it. They had nothing to fear. You know, they were steering the narrative. This wasn't an investigation of any kind. Nobody believes that. Anyway, let's move on to the next story. I'm not kidding. I wanted to go on for a full hour. And I may even do a full hour on this story. I'm not kidding. It was pretty amazing, I thought. All right, what else do I have? I got to close this one. How do I get rid of you? I don't know. I don't want to hit a close button because I'm afraid it'll close. Oh, close. There we go. All right. I've been watching and listening to interviews of candidates just before the midterm elections. What I have found is the totality of the Democrats or the left, at least those running in Oregon and Washington, all talk about reducing the cost of things versus raising up the citizens. Instead of increasing the opportunities for better jobs, these candidates only talk about reducing the cost of products, which means they want to control the cost of products that people who work hard to produce them. Those people want to recoup their costs and make profits. That's the idea of being in business. That is the whole idea of being in business, is to make a profit. Why else would you be in business? The sad thing is there are so many dependent voters in Oregon that they buy into the reducing cost versus being lifted up. And I'm not kidding about that. You know, Dems can say, oh, I mean, the commercials here in Oregon is, you know, a lot of them are based on, oh, we reduced prescription drug pricing, or we are going to reduce the cost of, you know, fuel and make it, you know, more available, economically feasible for you to buy it. It's not like, hey, we're going to create more jobs in an environment of healthy business in this state so that you can go get a better paying job. It's not like any of them try and, you know, talk about lifting up the community, the supporting the business community, especially like in Portland. You know, hey, we're going to clean up the streets so you can have foot traffic come by your shops and, you know, get this economy rolling again. Oh no, we're going to try and reduce the prices of all those things by just mandating that the prices be reduced. Yeah, we're just going to make a law that you can't make any money on your product. Well, that's genius. That should chase out any remaining businesses that are left. I don't know. Let's see, we only have a few minutes, right? Oh, we got 5 minutes. I could say 100,000 things in 5 minutes. Let's see what I wanted to talk. Oh, okay. So we're going to do this story real quick. Dang it. That's not how I wanted to do it. That's how I wanted to do it. Let's bring this up. China caught trying to disrupt our justice system. DOJ accuses 10 Chinese spies and communist agents of malign schemes. So this is interesting. The Department of Justice announced on Monday that it had charged 13 Chinese... First of all, I'm surprised that they're talking about the Department of Justice in the United States, which kind of makes me suspicious about this whole idea. The Department of Justice announced on Monday that it had charged 13 Chinese nationals, 10 of whom are believed to be spies, for efforts to unlawfully exert influence in the United States. Their alleged crimes include coercing American residents into traveling to China to face punishments, stealing secrets pertinent to the criminal investigation of Hawaii, that's a guy who they busted a year or two ago, and recruiting more spies for China. Now here's, I'm going to get to another story that's going to support this in just a minute. In three separate cases, communist agents operating in the United States sought to execute the will of the genocidal Chinese communist regime to interfere with the rights and freedoms of individuals in the United States and to undermine our judicial system that protects those rights. These new unsealed indictments come at a time of growing tension between China and the West. I'm not sure about that. And after recent revelations that the communist regime is running illegal police stations across North America and Europe. That's awesome. So let's get to the next story and see if this is a good idea. Where is it? Yeah, here we go. Here's where I really get to the just say no part. Chinese labs purchase of U.S. land for primate breeding facility draws scrutiny. Really? No, I don't think it draws scrutiny. I think it draws just flat no. No, we're not going to do this. Like, number one, why would China have to buy land in the United States for a primate breeding facility? China has, number one, a ton of land. And number two, I think they have their own primates in China. Pretty sure of it, as a matter of fact. So there's no need for us to allow any Chinese company or any Chinese firm or any Chinese anything to build a primate lab here in the United States. There's no need for it. I mean, what are they going to do? Just imagine what they're going to do with a primate facility, breeding facility in the United States. What do you think is going to escape from that lab? You think it's going to be a nice, tame, friendly chimpanzee that's just going to run around and, you know, do your shopping for you or do your chores, drive your car, whatever? No. It'll either be a monster... You know, some crazed chimpanzee that just runs around killing everybody, or it'll be, you know, loaded with some kind of, you know, primate virus, which is going to, you know, easily spread through gain of function, easily spread to the human population and kill us all. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's show. Didn't get to everything. I will next time, I'm sure. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you on next show. Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.